Welcome to Commons Conversations, a series of interviews with campaigners sharing their experiences and insights into activism, learning and movements, radical history, and more. The podcast is produced by the Commons Social Change Library, a website containing over 1,000 resources for campaigners, which can be accessed for free at commonslibrary.org. The library contains many other podcasts, including other episodes in our series. This episode is from our second series and was originally broadcast on Community Radio 3CR. In it, Aoife Carley-Hannan, Engagement Officer with the Commons Library, chats with Ned Howie, the co-founder of Tectonica, a movement-building agency whose stated mission is to create a seismic shift in the way politics are done through innovations that empower social, economic, and environmental justice movements. Alongside directly helping organisations, political parties and unions with an array of strategic, creative and technological services, the agency also created and facilitates the Tectonica Organising Network. In this conversation, Aoife and Ned focus on the democratic dilemmas, opportunities and challenges associated with new generative AI technologies. They discuss the possibility of these tools to deepen existing biases and power imbalances, but also the possibilities they create for fostering practices which can connect people to social change movements and transform our societies for the better.
Before we get stuck into the questions and the actual interview itself, I'd just like to acknowledge that I'm personally tuning in from Naam, which is Melbourne in so-called Australia, and this is the unceded land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation. So just like to pay my respects to elders past and present and acknowledge their continuing connection to the land and the waterways that I'm lucky to call home. So yeah, you work for Tectonica. Want to tell us a little bit about Tectonica, what you do, and how, like, what Tectonica's position or place is within social movements?
Tectonica is a movement building agency, which sounds like a little bit of a strange thing because we don't really have an official industry area for movement building agencies. And it uses tactics and techniques from a lot of different disciplines, basically, both tactical approaches and actual overall work. We don't have something for movement building that's as formalized as kind of the agencies out there that do marketing to support businesses, but we support progressive organizations and campaigns in the work that they do. And we do this in a very specific way. Our mission is basically to create a seismic shift in the way that politics are done. So it's not just about helping have some kind of service for the organizations that we work with, but specifically about helping them innovate in the way that they're doing the work. We work with social, economic, and environmental justice movements. And specifically, we think that if we do the work in the right way, we're also going to be winning. We say often that we could win every single campaign that we work with, and our mission wouldn't be done. We need to change the way that we're doing the work, because fundamentally, the right people are going to be winning, the right causes are going to be winning. If we are tied to and innovate the way that we are doing work, the whole kind of arena of politics should change. So how we do this, a lot of people get confused by too. We have a broad array of strategic, creative, technological services, you know, and the parties that we work with, political parties that we work with, or the candidates, organizations, and unions, it's not just tactical services that we provide. Very specifically, we do provide tactical services, but that's always framed in a bigger picture of unlocking transformational opportunities, not just transactional ones. And really, this is focused towards us rooting the work fundamentally in transforming the organizations so that they can derive their power from the people, from the constituents, from the communities that they're responsible in representing. We do this through opportunities discovery, which we explore with our organizations, kind of what they're not seeing and help them uncover. We believe the communities are the solution, so we help them uncover those solutions within those communities, help them kind of see the bigger picture and have a process to outline what they're missing or what they might be missing. But it comes from them, the ultimately the solutions. We also build movement infrastructure. So we help people get set up on CRMs, which help them build contacts and relationships so they can track them, or websites or full tech stacks and all kinds of other technological things that help them really power those movements. And we also help support them on people-based campaigns. So this is not just like communication campaigns or whatever. Like, we do some branding and comms and things like that, but always as a with a focus of people-based power as the kind of thing that will actually be able to do this. And the last thing that we have is community capacitation. So we have a network, the Tectonica Organizing Network, TON, which is basically a community of several thousand organizations across the globe, really all over the place, that are really have this kind of transformational mindset in place. And we're really working together to be able to change the way that we're doing politics that is more transformational, that is more focused on people power. And so, you know, as we're learning things with our clients and the research we're doing, and as we're looking at resources, at some point we said, well, we're not going to be able to work with every organization in the world, but we have a social impact mission. Let's make sure to share what we're doing. And out of that, we started to create an organization where people support each other. We provide resources for folks. We provide original thought leadership and conduct our own research, et cetera, et cetera. So lots of different things basically to achieve this end goal of trying to make our politics more people-based, because we fundamentally believe that's the way that we're going to achieve these justice ends.
Amazing. That sounds really awesome. And a lot of different things to do that you're doing, and you've got your finger in a lot of pies, it sounds like, and also to talk to you at some point about CRM.
We love CRM work. I mean, CRM is exciting because there's really this whole range of things that I can do. Some people just think of it in very simple unidirectional emails and keeping people's data, but CRMs are managing contacts and growing contacts, which have huge possibility because movements are built on relationships, and relationships can be scaled. But you really can use some technology, and CRMs are the way. We call them constituency relationship management systems, and that helps scale those things.
Yeah, and I think looking at them as like that thing about relationships between people rather than, I guess, like the, you know, especially when I'm looking at different ones and they're often framed in the business mindset of like people equals profit, you know. Yeah, so in your article that you have in the Commons Library, The Democratic Dilemma of AI, talk about a range of different ethical dilemmas posed by the integration of AI in political and advocacy campaigns. Can you explain a little bit about them?
I should give a disclaimer here, which is I'm not anti-AI. I'm actually super excited and hopeful for AI, and also, if we ignore the reality that we're already in the AI age, especially with this new generation of AI that is very powerful, that's more universal, that's AGI is really powerful, LLMs are really powerful. There's things that have really, in these past year, especially the result of the last kind of advancements in the last 4 years, have jettisoned us forward into kind of a new technological age. This technological age is as powerful, I think, as the Industrial Revolution. I think it's a really good, if not more powerful, honestly. It's not so much just like, oh, these things that we have now are really exciting. The speed at which these are developing right now in their fundamental possibility and potential for change is astronomical. Once you start to look into them, the things that we couldn't do, you know, a year ago are possible now. And what we'll be able to do in a year or two, a lot of the current kind of standards that we think of the world working are just going to disappear and be replaced by things that are far more powerful, far better. And this is going to improve our lives. So I want to say, I'm really excited. The Industrial Revolution, like, it did some amazing things and also some horrible things, especially those things that we weren't thinking through or weren't prepared for as our world changed. Because it is powerful, we need to be intentional and thoughtful about what it has there. So I just want to start by saying, don't fear AI. Be intentional, be cautious about AI because it is powerful, and we want to mitigate some of those potential harms as much as we can, and also power it towards the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, the Industrial Revolution is really where a lot of our organizing practice came out of, and that was because of the harms, the systemic harms that was causing that we were not seeing at the time. We had women in textile factories that were burning down without any fire regulation and, you know, organizing that happened in response and the differentiation that didn't happen previously in terms of wealth and all these kinds of things that basically we had to be set up to fight the changing effects and systemic harms coming out of the Industrial Revolution, despite all of the good and, you know, things that helped us a longer lifespan and better goods and all this stuff. We had to think of AI like this and prepare ourselves for it. It doesn't mean deny the reality of AI, or let's just not use that because it could be dangerous. It means let's look at the full giant potential impact of these and be super intentional as we go in. And there's a number of different ways that things could really have an impact in terms of the components, especially around politics, civics, campaigns, advocacy, etc. First of these is just maintaining a lot of the standard tech considerations that we had in the past. Quite frankly, all of the stuff concerns with data and privacy and all these things that we're kind of already dealing with, but haven't gotten a handle on with social media age and with a lot of the newer techs, they're going to be accelerated a little bit. So we need to even more be cautious of those things. And we haven't solved them for the past. We haven't properly regulated in a lot of cases. We haven't properly dealt with them. We're already dealing with that stuff. And now as we have this kind of accelerating factor of AI, we need to be even more considerate. Then there's malicious activities. Of course, a lot of the stuff that was already going on, disinformation, you know, malicious practices that was already happening, that again is going to even accelerate even more, like exponentially. And it's going to be way easier, especially we have the ability to do it easier, more convincingly, at greater scale. We need to be super cautious of the impact that that's going to have in these malicious activities and be prepared for that entering into our political scenes. But there's one other thing, you know, besides the kind of preparing for us to fight a world that's changing and probably going to create more inequality. And besides the current tech considerations, and besides these malicious activities of deep fakes and all the things that are, you know, increased disinformation, there's one other thing that I think we have to be super cautious of. And again, the Industrial Revolution serves as a really good example, which is systemic harm that happens as we integrate these tools. Our civics change as we integrate new technologies every time. It changes the way that we conduct politics. And this is not about an individual use, but an awareness of the system that's changing as we integrate them and as we update them. And as we get excited by a lot of the opportunities that are there, we sometimes ignore the systemic harms. What I predict will be most kind of impactful and most concerning about AI are the systemic harms that are going to happen. This is, to start with, bias. You know, we're bringing in information, it's already super biased. And bias is a complicated thing because in reality, there's no such thing as unbiased AI. Like, we can't expect it to be unbiased. It's pulling from the internet, even the language that we use, the language itself has bias in it. And in the past, we had humans that were representing that language and questioning that language and editing it for their own communities and whatever. This is a universal AI. So it's coming in with a lot of those biases, specifically with a lot of discriminating factors that mirror all of our basically slanted privilege in our world. So we've got a global north slant, we've got a very white slant, we've got a very western slant, we've got very male, you know, like all of these elements of bias are baked in. Even with the conscious efforts of some of these tech companies, are they really baked in? Then we have this other element, which is the trust gap. We already have, I think, you know, it talks about disinformation already being a problem that's going to accelerate. Disinformation is not the disease. Disinformation is the symptom of the disease. People have been making up things about their opposition or whatever, or making up fake things to put out there to manipulate civics since, you know, basically we had democracy. That's not a new thing. What is a new thing is that we exist in a world that's changed because of the social media age, where disinformation really goes out quicker, where trusted sources no longer are trusted. And that trust is, you know, basically there's a gap now between the civics that is above us and the civics that people used to see in their everyday lives. I call that the trust gap. That's where we're getting populist right-wing people in power and where people are going out, for example, to vote for Donald Trump, because he's, quote, not a politician. They're not excited by the campaign or the policies. They're excited by voting against an establishment that they don't trust. And there's this gap is really damaging our democracies. AI is going to accelerate that. It's a systemic harm. It's going to likely accelerate that trust gap even more. And specifically, you know, we're talking about even having a place where information is, you know, not sourced in humans. It's sourced in the general voice of some, you know, machine algorithms. Of course, people are going to distrust more. So we're going to really accelerate and stimulate in a bad way that trust gap. And the last one of these that I think is really important, that's a systemic harm we should be considering, is the fact that we'll be increasing our transactional practices with AI if we're not intentional about it. Again, there is transformational opportunities, but if we're just doing more of what we're doing more efficiently, or, you know, all accelerating the tactics that we currently have, our politics is going to become increasingly more transactional. This is the biggest concern I have, honestly, because we're already living in a world where our direction of our politics is going extremely transactional and away from the transformational. We did this, you know, we surveyed thousands of organizations in a qualitative and quantitative study in 2020 in Europe. And we found that the more personalized an intervention, online intervention was, and the more decentralized an intervention, the less likely it was featuring in people's campaigns, despite the fact that people generally agreed that we need to feature across the board on those campaigns. Mm-hmm. So we already have a huge problem with our practices being very focused on unidirectional, being very transactional. And we're really losing this practice that we used to have of transformational political practices. This is going to get even worse systemically with AI for a number of reasons. And it is the area where I'm most concerned. A lot of our political practices today have participation as kind of a happy accident. People are basically involving people only because they're short on resources. And what we see is these horrible practices sometimes where you actually have an opportunity to fundamentally engage people and bring them to the table in meaningful participation. And they're treating people as if they were machines already. You know, like a lot of the field practices that are out there have this opportunity to foster real discussions, have, you know, capacitate leadership, capacitate people to communicate strategically and how they're talking to people that think different. But really, they really just want to do it at a bigger reach, bigger scale, and treat it like it's a giant walking megaphone because they're short on resources and they think this is the best way. Sadly, there's this lost kind of value of that transformational practices in our current politics today. But that's my biggest concern for the systemic harm that we're going to cause if we're not intentional about the way that we apply it, because actually there are ways that AI could increase the transformational. We're just not doing it yet.
Would you say a large part of that is just because we're kind of playing catch-ups at the moment? Like, we have this new thing introduced, and so it of course is embedded with the issues that already exist in our society, and so we're kind of trying to play catch-ups rather than sort of setting it up to already be able to integrate it better into our movements?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things here. And yes, we're trying to play catch up because we really have damaged our civics from the social media age and haven't figured out how to address that yet. And already there's a new age. There's a new technological age. We're introducing something new that's going to even accelerate the problems that we have. We haven't solved for those problems yet. We haven't. And, you know, fundamentally, what I think is interesting is when we look at the short term on these tactics, they look like they're working. As we step back and look at the bigger, with the impact upon civics, the impact upon progressive movements, the impact upon democracy, we're losing the game. We're losing, you know, it's just a series of these kind of Pyrrhic victories that we have with tactical practices. Ooh, we raised a lot of money. And ooh, we grew our list really quickly. And oh, look at, we finally figured out how to like get more people to be members. Even those practices are getting worse and worse in the moment because we're so focused on reach and scale and short-term outcomes that the entire ground beneath us is shifting in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. As we think we're making these little wins, we're losing the practices that we had and the bigger value that we had in the past. And that will probably get worse unless we're intentional. Again, there's opportunities about it in with this new technological age. There's opportunities that are great. We just mm-hmm. need to be intentional and value the bigger picture thing over these short-term returns. And I'll be quite frank, the short-term returns are in a lot of cases coming from the fact that a lot of the texts that we're using for politics, the playing spaces that we have in politics, and the industry that we've built about around politics are guided by market forces. Whether you're capitalist or not a capitalist or whatever, civics has different drivers than market force drivers. And the entry of these market force drivers kind of through these technologies really are going to favor short-term outcomes, which is, you know, a good example and one that should be a cautionary tale from social media, for example, is these platforms that we're going favor all the things we don't want in a good civics. Simplicity, hate-based messaging, fear, you know, looseness with the facts, a disengagement. That's because they're built to sell us shoes. They're not built for civics. And they're certainly not built for transformational civics.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have any specific like examples around AI in particular, if it's already been used in any campaigns that you know of. I know you had a campaign recently, or you had an election recently in Spain.
People are really just starting to use these, and they're small examples. And so we have different things. We have people using AI tools that are already out there. And I should distinguish, AI has actually existed for a while. Mm-hmm. When we're talking really about AI right now, we're mostly talking about this new generation of generative AI tools that are, you know, very different. LLMs, AGIs, you know, these things that didn't exist a few years ago. But it's to note that AI has been already playing a role, obviously, in social media algorithms, in a lot of the tools that we already use day to day. Like, AI has existed for a while. It's this new generation of AI that's very specific. And with this new generation of AI, I think that there's lots of use cases of as people are applying them in their day to day work. The results of that is really new. I know a lot of the civic techs too are just being developed right now. Almost any civic tech that's basically, you know, focused kind of AI first is at best in beta. Most of them are still in development. So I see experiments that are happening out there right now in little cases that people are using them in tactics. But I don't really have great examples of specific campaigns which are very putting AI technology at the forefront because it's so new. I am excited by a few of the techs that are out there and the way people are utilizing them in some of the specific texts that we have. Open Field, for example, I know is developing a field CRM, really cool one with kind of a very good mindset about good political practices. They're developing right now a AI component that's going to help field organizers process information in a more efficient way that's going to bring that information back and cumulate it so that it impacts the campaign. So that's a great connection directly to community, taking information that's going to then impact, hopefully, the campaign and better represent accountability to its constituents. I'd say most people are using them to speed up their transactional practices, whether that's fundraising or targeting and digital ads. Like, those are the more prominent experiments that are happening right now. And I wouldn't say across the board those are bad practices, but they're ones that I'm less excited about because they do have this possibility to further increase the transactional while kind of decaying the transformational potential. I'm not against transactional practices and tactics. We need those. We need those constantly in our campaigns and our mobilization, but we're really heavy on those compared to the transformational politics that really are key to us moving progressive causes, not just winning campaigns, but moving the societal consensus through movement building.
Yeah, you've already talked a bit about the most prominent ethical considerations, but you did also talk in that article that you wrote about the increasing ability of AI to like mimic or attempt to mimic human interactions. How do you believe this raises ethical considerations in the campaigning space?
To start with, it's amazing to see how little people have thought about this. And I'm saying this as a open and proud nerd. Like, this is the like central topic of like half of the sci-fi genre over the past century. You should not be shocked by the fact that AI can mimic human interactions. Like, this is, I feel like I've been studying this since high school with every episode of Star Trek and every Philip K. Dick novel. And like, I don't know how people are not talking about this and missing this. Like, I certainly have my mind on this. And yes, since our first kind of thinking of machine building from Alan Turing, like the Turing test literally is, can a machine replicate the experience of being another human? Like, this is central to this technology, what's how it's changing, what it's presenting. And I think there's something that has to be very much thought of here, which is this is the real differentiation between any technology that humans have had before. It can replicate the human experience, okay? It can replicate very well and increasingly well the relationship and the feeling of that relationship between that humans have. We are built, first of all, as a social species. That is like literally where we came from. That is baked into our core as a species. So we will have a very large tendency to even project upon connections, human connections, onto like inanimate things. Now we have things that like read almost as though they're, you're chatting with another thing, and those things are becoming more real. That's in some components exciting, but in some components should be very concerning and opens up a whole Pandora's box of other concerns, specifically in civics. And why in civics? Because civics is how societies make decisions. Civics is how we as individuals and communities make decisions together for better long-term outcomes. You know, things like saving our species from the destruction that we're doing, or from the systemic harms of power and power differentials. Like, this is the core of our democracies, is built on how people relate to each other, and fundamentally with transformational practices, with practices that are about progressive movements. It's where we build power. It's through relationships, movements, the foundational part of movements is the connections that we have. The difference between just, I'm not going to pay my rent, and hey, my whole building's not going to pay my rent because the relationship is bad, or we're going on strike, is the relationships that we have to each other. And so when we're entering a factor that can mimic human relationships, it's going to completely upend the game in terms of transformational participatory democracy. It's going to upend the game in terms of the trust that we have for each other. And if we're feeling fooled, you know, if that campaign message is coming out from a machine, not a candidate, and we're feeling betrayed by that, if we have a relationship really tricking people and we're not authentic with people, that authenticity, that trust is going to decay. And fundamentally, too, if we're just replacing the places where we have real humans authentically right now with machines, we're going to be both losing the practice of doing democracy. Democracy is something we do, not something we have. And we're going to be decaying all the potentials that we have for the fundamentals of movements. I think that the AI age, if we're not intentional, could be the death of movements. I fundamentally believe it. And if it's the death of movements, then we're stuck with the world that we have, and a world that is naturally, through the systems that we're having, getting more unequal, more unjust, more unfair. We need civics. We need the practices that we have for justice in our world. Mm-hmm. And so this potential to replicate the human experience particularly is very concerning for me. That's if we're not intentional about it. And I want to be really core here that we need to have an awareness about the potential of relationships and the role that it plays in politics, because it can go the other way if we put our minds to it, if we're not just applying these tools with like the quickest, the fastest, the cheapest, if we're not just letting market forces enter in and just being like, well, this particular fundraising vendor, or this particular like list building service, or this particular whatever, like it can do it faster and cheaper and at greater scale. If we have intentionality about it, it actually could go the exact opposite way, because these tools are powerful and do open up real possibility. So I am not a robot. You're not a robot. And our constituents are not robots either. And they're not just subject to our organizations or campaigns. They are our organizations and campaigns if we're doing civics right. But that means that we have to make sure to be accountable to them, to bring them to the table, to give them a place and make it about participation.
Yeah, that's really, I think it's really interesting what you're saying as well in the beginning of that about being a nerd and looking at AI, you know, from a long time through sci-fi and that kind of like prediction of what the future will look like. And I think I grew up in the MSN age. So we had like what was sort of an early iteration of ChatGPT, I guess, in like SmarterBot and those kind of things.
Kind of addictive it is once there does feel like something there's like a relationship with. It's going to get way more wild. ChatGPT, I use it and I love it. And I will find myself at times getting frustrated with it, getting excited with it, like having an emotional attachment with the relationship I'm having with ChatGPT. Imagine these companies start entering in commerce, marketing, products, influencing the way we think about these things, or reinforcing the thoughts that we should have about the system being okay and the power differentials in the world being okay. Like, get a lot of problems that could come up with these technologies if we're not very cautious and very intentional about them.
Well, we've talked a bit more about the kind of impact it'll have, the larger scale sort of macro level, but in terms of like in smaller organizations, advocacy organizations, the sort of, what would you say some of the main considerations or ethical dilemmas are in comparison to those sort of, if there's a difference, I guess, in between the two?
So one thing here, what I'm talking about systemic harms to consider is that a lot of small organizations, I saw this in the past, they were like afraid to go on like Facebook because they thought, you know, back decades ago, because they were afraid because they heard terrible things about Facebook. But it was like, oh, you're just seeding that ground. You're not actually helping the systemic impact of this by seeding the ground to negative players. And I think we have, while we have to look at these bigger picture systemic harms and take them on and be conscious about them, be conscious about the way we're using them, we also have a really big potential threat, especially for those smaller campaigns that are not really going to have, you know, that impact of it. If they individually just abandon out of concern or whatever, that's going to have a harm too for our progressive causes and our progressive movements. Particularly because those that are being driven, the more powerful people, are going to adopt these really quickly. They have the resources and the space to actually learn and adopt really quickly, whereas our smaller organizations and campaigns often don't. So if they, you know, they're already pressed for resources, they're already short on time. I'm not saying that we shouldn't dive in and experiment with AI with these small organizations. Quite the contrary. I'm saying we should. And I've heard from people that didn't even try AI. Oh, I'm not going to try it because it's just concerns and whatever. And I don't believe in all that. And it's, you know, it's not going to replace me or whatever. Like, no, it's not going to replace you. You're going to be replaced by those that know how to use AI. This is a part and a tool that we need to be using. And we need to lean in on that with intentionality, of course, and with looking at ways that we can, as a movement, broader progressive movement, as people that believe in transformational practices and movements, how we can actually use these tools too, to actually affront the issues that we're going to come up with, a changing world, a more unequal world, new problems that we haven't even thought of yet. So small campaigns should be leaning in on AI. Mm-hmm. And particularly, I think a lot of our small campaigns, as they should, represent communities that are already underrepresented. And these AIs are already showing, you know, that they're like, there's a huge gap in the uptick in adoption between communities that are more privileged and those that are not. Mm-hmm. So we're already on the like back end of these things. You know, we need to be supporting us for the adoption of these tools. Of course, with intentionality, of course, with the awareness of a new world of unequalness that's coming out of these, of course, with all of the ways that these could be used bad and make sure that we're not, you know, replacing our constituents' voices and make sure that we're not alienating our constituents or being inauthentic or losing the trust. But yes, can we use these tools for being better at what we're doing? We must.
I think that's definitely really important. Something I've noticed a lot with a lot of people in the sort of advocacy space is a sort of, I guess, arguably like conservatism when it comes to new technologies and a fear of them, because I guess you have the potential harm and also just sometimes a bit of a hesitancy towards new things in an ironic way, sort of, you know, new phones or new social media, you know, TikTok or whatever the latest thing is, it'll be, oh yeah, but you know, there's potential issues or something like that. But it's definitely unhelpful. And then you also then get left behind in that process. And I think especially like you're saying with AI is it's such a massive shift.
We are by definition going to be on asymmetrical power challenges. Mm-hmm. Those that are fighting for environmental, economic, and social justice, we have less resources and less power. So we have to, it doesn't mean we can't win because we can build power. And we can do that through collective action and coordinated action to have a greater power output and by making power visible within our communities. But what we need to make sure of is going in is that we're going to be less resourced. We need to take advantage of every tool that we can in doing so. But we need to do so intentionally so that it doesn't cause greater harm to our communities or untether us from our communities, detach us from the voices of our communities. We need to be using it to bring people, to build more power amongst those communities and center it in those communities. And if we're not cautious about how we use it, we will be doing the contrary. So it's not really if we use it, it's really a question of how we use it.
So yeah, what strategies would you suggest for imposing limitations on the utilization of AI in the context of political campaigns?
So first, it's about what we're trying to achieve with it. If it's just turning up the volume on transactional practices, we have to be very cautious. You know, I don't think, especially as places like the US right now, where there's just everyone is burned out on being bombarded with spam, and there's not good regulation around using people's data consensually. Like, I don't think just turning up the volume is going to help us engage more people in civic politics, which is really what we need to be doing. So the intention being participatory, the intention being transformational, that's really key. It's very much about what purpose we're putting them towards. Secondly, in terms of more like tactically, when we're applying these, we need to be very aware of the different ways which we can use them. Are we using it to proofread something we wrote, or are we asking it to generate something original? Those are two very different things. And I'm not saying one is good or bad. I don't know. But we need to be intentional about how that is. And when we're using them in different ways, be conscious of the impact of that. So one of the things that I'm very big on, and I think is very key, is transparency when these are being used. You'll notice at the bottom of my blog articles, I'll say exactly what generative AI was used for, whether it was the image. We need to be transparent with our audience, which are constituents ultimately, that we are using these in a certain way. You know, was it just used to proofread, or was it sourced from that? That those are very different things. And I think we need to maintain the trust. We need to be transparent about that and aware of the authenticity of how that is. Secondly, when we're using these tools, let's say we're using it to write a fundraising email, it's going to bring in all the language and bias. You know, I was doing some experiments and I talked about this in one of my blog posts around like talking about abortion and reproductive rights. And I very consciously didn't use the word woman to see if it's the like tease out to see what it defaulted to. Of course it used woman. You know, it's coming from the general like consensus, whatever. It did not use pregnant people. And so it was immediately in its language, assuming the exclusion of non-binary and trans women, you know, like it was. So we need to be super cautious that if we're going to use it as the source of that, it's coming from a general consensus source, which is the thing that usually as progressives, we need to be challenging. And so we need to really double check and go in like, is this really speaking our language as it develops language? Or is it speaking like language of power of the global north, of white male, cis, hetero, you know, like all of the privileges, basically. And so we need to be super conscious that in the way that we're using that information and drawing from there.
That had me thinking, to be honest, because I've definitely considered that in terms of like when you ask it questions, and I've seen it answer questions very blatantly, biasly, but less in the consideration around the actual specific use of language in messaging. Like, I mean, I guess, you know, when I do use ChatGPT, I use it in a very kind of like conversational sense to like sort of generate messaging rather than getting everything from that source.
And also I would add to that, it's going to, while being very useful and quicker, it can also limit our political imagination. Creation of these sources, whether that's images or words, what they carry bias with them, because they're representatives of how we understand our world. It's going to be much easier when it's coming from an AI-generated machine to basically miss those places where we should be questioning. Progressive work, as we know, like it's really hard in organizations. Everyone's very opinionated. We know this, but that's why they're there. And there's a lot of conflicts within the movements, within the organizations. And a lot of times, yes, that's like frustrating. Sometimes it feels like slow to move things. But that conflict is actually part of the work that we're doing. When somebody raises their hand when we're doing work around reproductive rights and says, no, we should use this other language because it's excluding people. And then we have a discussion around it. I'm not here to say which language we use because I'm not the person most impacted by that issue. But the conflict that we have around that at the table is actually a key part of us moving transformationally from an unjust world that we live in to a more just world that we want to build. And if we remove that through just accepting the bias of AI because the work gets quick and we look at, hey, let's win a short-term gain in this specific campaign, then we really are limiting ourselves and the potential that we have as progressive movements.
And I guess in that as well, it's like, because it's being, AI is built on the existing world that we live in and the existing information that it is, pulling from, then how can it be transformational? How can we envision something through using that same language and that same framework, I guess, as well?
That is exactly it. Yes, mm-hmm. we're going to get freeze our politics in the unjust consensus understanding of the moment rather than continue to challenge it in its underlying part. I mean, it's funny because people talk about movements and they use it in like very different ways, but movements mean a thing. The thing that we're moving is society's consensus understanding. It is transformational. And that doesn't just happen at societal level. It happens in our campaigns at the individual level and at the community level through our organizations and through the work that communities are doing. But fundamentally, we're not just democracy is not just taking a giant survey of how everyone feels about something. Democracy is a practice that we conduct. And specifically, democracy is a practice that we take part in. And as we take part in it, we move that ground to a better, more just place than it currently is. For me, it's not just about a constant battle of having the best conversation of ideas. It's not just a marketplace of ideas. It's about constantly unlayering and bringing forth the visibility of communities that we're not even seeing in our very unjust world.
Yeah, so I guess like you were saying, AI is obviously not going away anytime soon. And you've talked a lot about how I guess we can use it in a transformational way. What is your, I guess, vision in an ideal setting of how we could use AI and how it can really better our movements?
I am so excited by AI, and I think we've really just started to scratch the surface. To share a personal story, I mean, I never planned on owning a business. I'm 14 years in and I'm still like, what happened? I never imagined myself as a business owner. I never thought of myself. To share a little bit of my story, like I always was an activist. And since I came out at the age of 14, was very, very radicalized and seeing the injustice of the world, gained to consciousness through that experience of privileges and injustices of power that other communities had, not just the ones that I was part of, and, you know, was always very active. I worked in homeless services. You know, my first career for almost a decade was in homeless services in San Francisco, seeing the impact of how badly our civics and our societies fail certain people. And, you know, after quite a time working in that and seeing things that were just unimaginable, I really wanted to go work on systemic underlying problems that were creating this situation. And I went off to study a master's in public policy at UCLA. My first week of classes, my husband died, 31 years old, completely unexpected. No, like couldn't imagine something like this happening. And my life just exploded. On a one-way ticket, I moved to Argentina and had to figure out what the heck I was going to do with my life. A year later, we started Tectonica, my business partner, Mariana, and I. And she's from small town Entre Rios, which is a province in Argentina. She never imagined opening a business either. We both kind of had activist backgrounds. We both studied literature, not even politics. We never imagined opening up a business. It was beyond our, like, it's kind of, you know, we had no connections, no capital, not really the right experience that we should have had in this world. You know, we've built it through the clients and from listening and learning from our clients over the last decade and so years, but it's been really challenging. And I think, it's kind of a small miracle of fate and real drive, you know, really a lot of that drive coming out of my own experience and having lost my partner and really wanting to create a space and feeling the need for more justice, that we were able to build this thing through perseverance. It's kind of a miracle that we've survived the years that we did. We had some hard years, but I knew nothing about business. But I also think that my voice is important in the work that we do, in the work that we're having, coming from my experience of 10 years in homeless services, probably is better, I think, to have people that build businesses off of seeing the injustices firsthand. I see our politics and I see so many people that need to be the most important people that don't have access to being represented, to being part of those politics, whether it's working in political businesses, whether it's working in organizations, whether it's represented in democratic representational politics. I see people shut out of these things because they don't have access to the information. They're not the elite. They didn't study the right thing, whatever. AI has a huge potential to help people that come from backgrounds that are out there go more represented and be more present in the spaces where we most need that representation. And I, like, even in my work now, I'm like, God, I wish 14 years ago when we started Tectonica, I could have looked up how to structure a business or things that I've learned over the years, reading hundreds of books, literally just desperately trying to figure out how do we do this thing. But ChatGPT and other AI sources make this information so much more accessible, make the work around it so much more accessible in a way that I really hope other people that are have an idea or starting things or want to build things or want to enter politics or want to run an outsider campaign, that they have access now in a way that they didn't. And that's fundamentally one of the things that AI has huge potential to actually do, is to give people access to the information and to tools that they haven't had previously. It skills people up in areas where they shouldn't have to study 4 years of business or 4 years of politics or whatever things that they might not generally have the privilege to be able to go and do like others that currently are represented do. But beyond that, in terms of the text that we create and the way that we actually use these texts, AI is amazing because it can take unstructured data and form it into structured data. It has the ability to be very conversational. It has all these abilities that we could be applying them for actually building stronger connections, for identifying our motivators, for looking at these things that fundamentally do build relationships with people. You know, I look at the practices that are good practices about going deeper and engaging people more, and I'm like, wow, there's so many opportunities for AI right there. Right now, we're not doing a lot of stuff because we don't have the resources, and it's a good way to do it efficiently. You know, a lot of people, we were aiming more towards transactional practices, just sign them up on a petition and ask them for money, you know, do a big social media campaign, whatever, instead of the like, hey, let's jump on the phone and connect people, which is what movements actually are about, connecting people. Those things, whether they're events or supporting small groups to develop community strategies, or actually connecting that first person that signed that petition to a real person that has a shared passion about that thing, those, we can find AI tools and build AI tools and apply AI to actually help us do those things better. Maybe we can connect people that have shared motivators together. Maybe we can even just like simple things that we're not doing right now, like connect their schedules so they can have a call. AI has all of these, you know, potentials to assess the information of why they signed that petition and what are their true motivators and how they want to participate in ways that we're not asking people to build deeper participation around. There's so much fundamental potential for these tools that we're really just starting to explore if we're dedicated to making it about more participation, more representation of voice, people being more at the table, involved, engaged, and having a bigger role in our civics and our democracies.
Going on from that as well, do you think, talking about, you know, the kind of climate that we're in at the moment and the thing around relationships, and especially around like our connection to people being kind of fraught, I guess, post that lockdown period of COVID, where we already had so much disconnection, and then we have AI coming in around that time. Do you think there's sort of our relationship to AI, do you think that's been, or this new technology AI has been influenced by that as well?
You know, I think that we don't even see coming what's coming. And that's kind of why I'm trying to use the information of looking historically, looking at what the problem that we have with politics, which I think is most people working in politics are not even seeing or concerned with, and looking at the very specific unique factors of AI and that they bring in to kind of predict what we should be looking at as we come up with this politics. We got sidelined by social media. I mean, remember the whole like 2008, 2014 period? We're super excited by like social media. We're like, wow, Obama segmenting like emails. That was like a very new exciting thing. Wow, look at like Occupy Wall Street. Hey, look at the Arab Spring. And we didn't see coming what was coming with social media. And the fact that after Obama, we got Trump. And, you know, we got the Arab Spring, but in Egypt, the people that had been building ground, you know, community infrastructure was the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, one, because yes, we can tip hip a thing with social media and this new internet age, but we couldn't sustain relationships in a way that was for the people that were really the ones demanding change in democracy. Yes, we could have Occupy Wall Street, but have we really solved the problem of wealth inequality and the unfair situations? No, we haven't solved that at all. We were very short-sighted and got very excited by the potential, as we should have with social media, without seeing the potential systemic damage as it was integrated. We're just beginning to see. We're just beginning to imagine what this AI age is going to look like and how it's going to impact our civics and our politics. And we should be excited, and we should be leaning in and going forward. And we should be doing that with a long-term foresight of the current context that we sit in, with an unjust world and with a politics that is deeply damaged and going against democracy and going against our progressive causes. We are losing worldwide right now. So yes, we should get excited, but we should get excited by making sure that it's going in the right direction and how we're accelerating things. We don't even know a lot of stuff, and I don't know. I'm thinking it through a lot, but there's things that I am sure I'm totally missing. Mm. There's things that are going to happen in our world that we're just not seeing. Will we have deep fakes? Yeah, we'll have deep fakes, especially in this next 2024 has more elections than in the world, than any year until 2048. So we're going to have a lot of cases where we're seeing immediately the impacts of AI. We haven't figured out how to regulate it. So it's really out there. We're counting on people to be ethical, which is totally wrong, because people are not going to. Both because they're people that don't wish to be ethical. There are people that are more, trying to keep their make a buck. Quite frankly, there's market forces that are going in. And quite frankly, even in some cases, we have a race that's out there, and we're going to excuse a lot of stuff just by saying we have to win. And so, I think that, yes, we have to win, but we have to look at the big picture of winning, not just the short-term wins. And A lot of people are going to justify a lot of bad stuff by saying we have to win. Mm-hmm. That's going to create longer-term systemic harm. Our long-term outcome is going to be greater than the short-term immediate thing that we're facing. Mm-hmm. And if we damage our democracies as we're gobbling up the short-term wins and quick efficiencies, whatever, we're really going to create a bigger problem than the problems that we're solving. So yeah, excited about the potential, and also let's do it intentionally. Let's not head in the wrong direction. Let's head in the right direction for what we're trying to solve for and the world that we're trying to create. This is fundamental. I just want to say, this for me is what civics is about. Right now, we're basing a lot of our politics on the immediacy. Yes, we can get immediacy out of our politics, especially with the social media playing field that we have, with fear and with hate and with the worst of our human emotions. But we, as I mentioned, are social species by our nature. And actually, the best of our civics, the best of people coming together to make decisions, better long-term decisions, which we know we can do, is because we have these distinct human emotions for social capacity that can have us build better long-term solutions. If we build our politics on that, on our desire to belong as a group, as our caring for one another, as our worry for our future generations, and as our love, it's not that those are less powerful than the fear and the hate and whatever. They're less immediate, but they're stronger emotions. And if we can lean in on those in the core of the politics that we build and how we apply our new text and how we value our politics, we fundamentally, it's the only way we're going to save our species. It's like we have these capacities as humans to have better outcomes as societies. If we're intentional about it, if we come together to make better decisions than just our individual immediacy, that we faced with. So I have hope. I have a huge amount of hope, but I also think that we need to have discussion and intentionality and be conscious of that potential of civics, which is built a good civics on our potential of responsibility, community, shared caring of each other. And fundamentally, without sounding too much like a tree hugger, which I am a little bit, love is what drives our making better decisions. It's from whether that's collective action like a strike or whether that's saving our species from the destruction that we're doing. Our politics can be based on love for our fellow humans and love for our community and love for each other. And I know it sounds super idealistic, but when we're faced with, hey, do we have to simplify that Facebook message so it gets more reach, versus can we ask somebody to come to the table to say, how are we going to stand together in power? Mm-hmm. I think that's the actual choice that we're facing right now. And where AI, that's going to be the choice that we're going to make. Mm-hmm. Are we going to go one way? Or are we going to go the other as we're faced with these new tools as they impact our civics?
Absolutely. And I think on that note as well, like, you know, we should be idealists on the left. And I think we're often skepticists, but if we are going to be motivated and maintain the motivation and the drive to believe that we can create the world and that we want, that that we need, that our, like you're saying, that our species actually needs to sustain itself, to exist, we have to have that idealistic, and also with, you know, the understanding that it's not just going to be all okay, but that we need to envision that world and have to keep that in our mind. Thank you so much for your time. That was really awesome. And I know I a million more questions I could ask now, and I'd love to talk more about them. And
we'll see how these AI experiments go, and then we can either commiserate or celebrate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I would say too, we have to have these discussions. That's why I'm so appreciative of your invitation to have this interview and to share some of these things, because I am really concerned. And the only way we're going to solve this is through dialogue, discussion, intentionality, and by holding ourselves to the direction that we want to go in. That's how we establish a direction, and then we need to do it.
You've been listening to Commons Conversations, produced by the Commons Social Change Library, a website containing over 1,000 resources for campaigners, all of which can be accessed for free at commonslibrary.org.